Is it on?
I was just asking about how many youngins you have now. How many did you have when you were working? You started working in September 68, I think you said.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I had the same nine.
You had nine then?
Uh-huh.
And they were all in school?
Yeah.
At that time. So yeah. You decided that you could get into Chapel Hill and...
Right.
And work while they're gone.
Yeah, do something I'd never done before, because that was the first time I had ever, you know, really been out and worked.
From here. You said you had worked in Connecticut, in Hartford.
Yeah, when I first married.
Uh-huh.
We lived there for about 2 years, and I worked there some, and came back to Hillsborough and started the family off and didn't get out to do anything until that time.
I went to school in Connecticut myself, in college. I went to Wesleyan down in Middletown, which is just below Hartford. I used to go up into Hartford.
Yeah.
So I might not have bought anything from your Foxes, but I was close around there.
Yeah, that's the way I worked. I enjoyed that.
Well, one of the things I'm trying to get straight, and one of the things that's difficult, and one of the things you and Mary and the others have really helped with, is trying to get the whole build-up to the strike, because that's not seen, it's impossible to research it except through your eyes, basically, and your memories of things. And one of the things I'm trying to put together, there were obviously grievances that you had. And there were grievances even at the time that you started with the others. But I'm trying to find out who you met with in the administration, the whole way up, the whole organizing part up to the strike. And I know you've been asked about it before, and so you can kick me if you just assume me, if you think I'm bothering you too much. But for instance, Citizen, once the strike started, and y'all had this meeting in Memorial Hall and everything, he said that he had received back in October a list of grievances. But I can't find that list, and I don't know. And he said that he had asked Prilliman to follow up on it, and it hadn't been done, and so on. And I was wondering if you remembered anyone taking that list to Citizen, or do you remember giving it to Prilliman and his having taken it to Citizen, or do you remember that, whatever happened to that list at all?
To my knowledge, I don't ever remember anyone giving Citizen any grievances until after we had gone on strike.
Okay.
The way I recall it is that what, you know, started the whole thing was people were being, you know, each payday, their checks were being like $2 shorter than the last payday. Some were $5 short, whatever, but the hours were the same. And we started, you know, comparing, you know, pay stubs and talking to each other and saying, well, you know, my hours are the same, I work the same thing, but this week my paycheck is shorter. And we just started whispering it among ourselves. And each week we started, you know, looking at each other's, you know, checks and whatever.
What started y'all looking at each other's so much? Was it, I know we talked with Preston Dobbins in class. He came and talked to us as you did. And he said that the black students were quite interested, and that obviously the workers were there, and there was and that there was a series of meetings. Do you remember back in the fall before meeting with the black students, or who called the meetings?
Yeah, now this began to happen before we started meeting, before we said anything to anybody. This started just among, say, Mary Smith, Esther Jeffers, Elsie Davis, Sarah Parker, and myself. We were the second shift that worked in the pine room, and it was 17 of us, along with, you know, the teenage, the school boys that came in, you know, part-time workers.
Were they all black? The newspaper report said that there were, of the 17, when they first went out, this was February, so it might have been different the previous fall, but said there were two whites.
It probably was, because as I remember, I think we did have a part-time girl that came in and worked the salad bar that was white, and...
Would they have been students?
They were students, right. They
Would
were
they get paid just as much or even more than some of the workers?
They were being paid as much, but they did not have... the benefits. That's what they were paid as much, but they, you know, they did not have the benefits that we were supposed to.
So would they be hired as part-time or
right.
temporary?
Temporary, right.
And without, and unless you were permanent, you didn't get the
right.
benefits,
uh-huh.
is that right?
So that's what started happening about the paychecks, and we started comparing and talking to each other. Then myself, I had started work there in September, and they when I was hired by Pendergraph, and he had he was the supervisor. He was supervisor when I was hired at the Pine Room, but when I he hired me in August and he left in September, and but he had told me that I was hired on a temporary basis. I would be there 90 days.
He told you that specifically?
Uh-huh. And when 90 days was up, if, you know, they decided to keep me on, then I would go on permanent payroll, which when I became a permanent worker, I would have sick and sick leave and annual leave. Along about this same time that we, you know, everybody started grumbling about the paycheck, I started grumbling about nobody said anything to me. I'd been there over 90 days, about 2 weeks over 90 days, and nobody said anything to me about going on permanent payroll basis. So I went to the manager.
This would have been, if you were hired in September, the 90 days would have been up sometime in December, right?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
So this was around the 1st of January, really, when I started. And Otis White was the supervisor then.
And Otis White is white.
Uh-huh. So I went to him and told him what I had been told and asked him about going on a permanent basis. So he told me that he would look into it. And so another 2 weeks went by and I didn't hear anything about it. So I went back to him. And so he told me, he said, well, he had talked with Mr. Prilliman, and Mr. Prilliman was supposed to handle it. At that particular time, there was not an opening for another permanent worker. When the next opening come, then I would go on it. And so I waited for about another week, and I just became angry and angry about it, because that was not what I had been told. So I went back to him one afternoon, when time come to go to work. And I asked him, I said, well, I would like to know, you know, why I wasn't told that. I said, another thing, I said, when I was hired, I was, you know, I was led to believe if I was a good enough worker, I would be kept on. If not, then I wouldn't. I said, now, here I am now. I said, I am working, still working on a permanent basis. I said, so that leads me to believe in the day, you know, I could be laid off or fired or whatever.
Were there other workers in your same position?
Yeah, was quite a few that had been
there. Had they been told 90 days?
Yeah.
That they would either go, would either get fired
right.
or
uh-huh. But they had, there were some that had been there as long as 3 years that was still on a permanent basis. So, so he told me that he would just have to check with Mr. Prilliman again about it. And so I told him, I said, well, I'll check with him myself. And he told me, he says, no. He says, we're open. I need you up there on that line. I'll check. And so I told him, I said, you don't need me on the line until I get straightened out. I walked out and I went upstairs to Mr. Prilliman's office.
Okay, his office was on the same floor as Lenore Dine Hall.
Right.
The Lenore
uh-huh,
serving area.
Right, uh-huh. So I told his secretary that I wanted to speak to him, and he had a real heavy voice, and he had the, you know, thing of talking to the employees, so they were afraid of him. And so he came out and asked me, did I want to see him? I told him yes. And so he did not ask me in his office. He just stood out there in the middle of the hall and asked me, what did I want? And I asked him, could we go in his office and talk? So we went in. And I told him, you know, what I was there, how long I had been there, how long I had worked over the 90-day period, and what Mr. White had told me, and what I had been told when I was hired. And I told him I either wanted to go on the permanent payroll basis, or either that I was going, you know, quit. Mm-hmm. And so he says, been here, and he said he had no knowledge. I haven't had any knowledge that you was here 90 days. We put all our workers on permanent payroll. Oh, he just done the work.
Yeah.
So he said, you go back downstairs and tell White to send me a card up here, and I'll get that thing wrote up right now. So I went back downstairs, and Mr. White said he was going to send it up. I said, no, I'll take it up. I said, because you supposed to have sent it up about 2 weeks ago. So now Mr. Perlman tells me he had no knowledge of it. So I took the card back up there to him. So in a way, you know, I think, you know, just to keep me quiet, he went on and put me on permanent payroll. Well, that, you know, done that part. But then we were still having a little knick-knacks about our checks, you know, being shortened, and the hours were the same. And so that's about the time I think the black students came in. They had been coming in to eat, and we had talked with them, not about any of our working problems, but just, you know, become friends. We understood what they were there for, and they had different, you know, things that they were doing and whatever. So,
did you meet them outside the outdoors there in the parking lot or anything, but did you have meetings at times when you weren't working with them, gather with them?
Mostly then, we talked with them on our lunch hours. See, we had an hour for lunch. So we would tell them what time we were going to eat. See, I had a lunch hour at one time, and Mary had one at a different time.
And you were working second shifts then?
Yeah.
Or first shift?
We were working second shifts. But we had different, you know, say I might have a lunch hour at 7 and she may have hers at 8.
Uh-huh.
So at 7, I would just grab a sandwich or something and go out in the lobby.
Or you go to a table or something?
Right. And they would come in and we would sit there and talk. And I was telling them about, you know, what was happening. And so was Mary when she had her lunch hour.
Yeah.
And so then Preston was the main one that, it was some more, but he advised us to, you know, keep a close check, you know, on the checks, and not only ours, but, you know, all of them that was, you know,
yeah.
There.
Yeah, I'll take that.
Okay, so we done this, I guess, for about 2 weeks, and then he said, well, maybe, you know, we need to get a meeting where we could have time to sit down and with more of the workers than just the two of us and, you know, discuss it. So what we done, we were supposed scheduled to go to work at 4:00 on Sundays. So we came over at 3:00 and we met them, I think probably was, I guess it was Manningham.
That was the place next door where you...
Yeah, okay, well that's where...
It wasn't upstairs in Lenore somewhere?
No.
You need to answer that?
No.
Come in.
Hey,
dude. Hi, Tom. The first meeting we had with them was over there because it was about 3:00 on Sunday.
And if you recall, was that the first time you had ever... gathered together with
yeah,
the
with
black
more,
students?
Right, with more than just Mary and
so
myself.
So you hadn't had a series of meetings during the fall or in January and stuff where you started to get together?
No. So we just talked and we mostly talked and told them what was going on, what we had observed about there were workers that had been there as long as 3 years that were not on permanent basis, how they would, you know, lay off the, you know, when time come, then they would lay off these people and take in the students as part-time, you know, replace them with the students. Mary, you know, like Mary was the cook in the pine room. She found out that she was classified as a dishwasher.
Were there any of these part-time students paid more than the regular workers, or was that a source of any friction?
No, it wasn't the pay, because we were paid the same. It was just that, you know, these people, like, people were there 2 years or something, and all of a sudden they say, well, you know, we're going to lay some folk off. They lay them off, and then the next day or two they would have students there, you know, where, you know, the students didn't make the hours. And what they would do, the ones that were there, like the ones that they kept on, we would do the double work until the students would come in, see, and that's how they would, you know, could have the students, you know, cut their hours. And we were doing, you know, work, you know, just all over the place, because I worked on the main line up there where you take the ordering, and I made the hot dogs and hamburgers and, you know, took all the other orders. And I had worked my line, the salad bar, and the sandwich counter, all, you know, combinations running from one to the other, like that. And normally there's a person for each counter. And then they would get they would have a student to come in and work so many hours. Okay, then the student would leave, say, around 7. Then from 7 to 12, I would go back into the same role of working, you know, the two or three counters.
Would you, do you remember, as you were, you know, getting these things done to you, trying to go see, some of the workers mentioned having gone to see Branch and gone to see Haskell and gone to Raleigh to see Caldwell, who was the classification guy, the state personnel guy, and maybe even some went to Eagles or... Can you remember going to see any of those people specifically?
Yeah, we went to Raleigh.
Did you see Caldwell?
We went to Raleigh and we talked with Caldwell. We never did really get to see whoever was in charge.
Uh-huh.
And we told him what was happening about, you know, how we were working, about the checks, you know, coming up short, you know, just about everything that was happening to us. So he took it, he wrote it down,
yeah,
and promised that we would hear something in a while, and we never did hear anything from there.
How about Branch? Did you see him?
We talked with Branch, and
I'm trying, still all before the strike.
This was before the strike.
And did you tell him that Prelliman was a pain?
Yeah, we told him about him, because, and also,
what was his reaction?
Well, the main thing, we went to see Prelliman ourselves about those shortened checks, and I think we went maybe one or two went, and so he came down in the pine room, and he just bawled us all out.
Branch did.
No, this was Prelliman.
Okay.
And that heavy voice of his, you know, and asked him, you know, aren't you satisfied, and you know, this and that and the other.
Because he'd been to see Branch.
Uh-huh, and he just shook up the majority of them. They got so frightened. And they got real quiet, and then, you know, we had to go, because it took us a good while to really get all of them to, you know, to kind of stick with us. And then he had frightened them off, you know, and it took us a good while, but it was about 5 of us just kept pushing it. And we would see some of the black students each day, and they would keep encouraging us. And so finally we got them back where, you know, they would say, well, I ain't going to say nothing, but I'll be with y'all, you know.
Yeah.
And they would ever say anything, but, you know, we knew that they agreed, you know, with us and, you know, with what we were doing.
Well, do you think the Pine Room, did you ever get an offer by Prelliman or any of the others to are threatened in the sense that they say you better shut up or quit talking this up with the black students or whatever, or you're going to lose your job, or we'll give you a pay raise now, or were there any actual offers, or was it just kind of hints of it? Or
Well, in the first strike, I got threatened. I didn't get any offers. It was just a threat that,
which,
you know, I would lose my job, that we were to stop communicating with any students that come in there. We no longer would be having lunch with any students, or, you know, talking, be seen talking to any students. Otherwise, you know, we could lose our job.
Who would tell you that, Prillman?
Well, the way I was told about it was, Mr. White, the supervisor, told us that Prillman had passed the word on to him.
Was did you get along with Mr. White pretty well?
No, I didn't.
Yeah. Was there another supervisor, or was he the...
Mr. White was the second supervisor I'd had. The first supervisor, when I went to work there, now Prendergraph hired me, but he left in the same month that I started work. It was a foreigner guy that was called Godbird, and we called him Mr. G. I had no problems with him. I thought he was, you know, just as fast he could be, and nobody had any complaints about him. And so in, I think it was December, it was December, they let him go, and that's when they hired Mr. White. Mm-hmm. Okay, Mr. White, to me, and I told him that, and I think that's what made it so bad between us. When we, you know, would get real, real busy, and everybody be running all over the place, the line would be out the door, and everybody would be just working their heads off trying to serve, you know, and get this, and if somebody was, you know, behind, they'd run back there and help them, whatever. He would stand back there in front of his office with his hands behind his back, and he would just stand there, you know, and stay up front. And so one day, after we had had about 17 students through the line and got a break, he came up through there. And so the line, you know, we would kind of break, so we were kind of standing around there. He came up through there, and he told us, he said, well, now it's time to get cleaned up for your next group come in so you can be ready for your next group round. So I told him, I said, and you know, I said, the other supervisors that we have had before you come here, I said, when we get busy like that, I said, they would come up and help and do whatever they could. I said, but you know, I said, you stands back there with your hands behind you like we're your prisoners, and you are watching our every move to make sure that we are, you know, working like we're supposed to. I said, I thought that you were supposed to come up here and help us too. And so I think, you know, that just put a bad thing between me and him, and he never really cared that much for me since then. And the way he showed it to me was, he would always, when there was somebody laid off, he would always suggest that I work that extra counter along with my counter. And I knew what he was doing. I felt why he was doing it. But I could do it, and I, you know, I went on and I worked it, and I didn't argue about it or whatever. But he would start letting the student help off about 7 o'clock. And then at 12, we would get off. From 11 to 12, we had our cleaning up to do, along with serving what students that was coming through real late. Mm-hmm. And so therefore, I had about 3 counters to try to clean up. And I thought that was very unfair. And so I talked to him about it. I said, now, before the student leaves, I said, can't you have her to clean up? I say, and then, I said, if she can wash her glasses in the salad counter and defrost it, and whatever, I said, then I can work it, and whatever, you know, it won't take as much cleaning up, you know, along with my other counters. And so he told me that he gave the orders or whatever, but what he was saying that I didn't tell him, you know, what to do. And so then we had this unusual Friday night. I don't know, something must have been happening on campus or what was happening. But anyway, we worked right on up to 12. And so I says, I'm not going to clean that salad bar up tonight. And so he told me, he said, we got ready to leave. He called me back. He said, you have to come back and clean that salad bar up. And I said, no, I don't have to clean that salad bar up. I said, my counter is the hot dog stand. I said, I worked it. I've also worked the salad bar. I said, I worked the sandwich bar. I said, I cleaned the sandwich bar up and my counter. I says, now, I'm not cleaning up the salad bar. I said, if you can't, you know, have the student help to clean it up, I said, then you should have cleaned it up yourself while you stand back there looking at us. And so I walked on out and I left. So he met me around there at the time clock, and he pointed his finger in my face, and he told me, he says, I'm not going to ever ask you to do anything else. From now on, I'm going to tell you to do it, and when I tell you, you better do it or else you know what you're going to do then. And so I didn't say anything to him. I left. This was on a Friday night. So we had a meeting set up with the black students for that following Sunday. So we, you know, discussed that along with the other things. And that's when we started making up a list of grievances.
Mm-hmm. And when did you actually decide to strike?
We met with them on that following Sunday, and I think it was the next Sunday that we planned to, you know, kind of sit down thing.
Mm-hmm.
And
did y'all actually take a vote?
Well, we took a vote just in the pine room, see, because like on a Sunday, the upstairs was closed. The pine room was the only thing open.
Mm-hmm.
And see, we
would that serve dinner or supper or just snacks?
Yeah, we had dinner line, and then we had the sandwich line.
Uh-huh. So
going at the same
was
time.
Was that every night or just Sunday? Mm-hmm.
That was every night.
Every night you could get dinner in the
right.
Pine room just like you could upstairs.
Right, because and then on a Sundays, everything was closed but that area, the pine room area. But every night we had the dinner line.
Was Perlman around all during the second shift, or he'd go home at 4 or 5 o'clock?
No, he would come in there and have Mary to cook him up 5 or 6 steaks, and he would wrap them up, and he would leave something like about 6:30. We didn't see him anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So we decided, we planned that. At the time, we didn't actually call it a strike. We were calling it a set. What we thought would happen, we had planned it for just that one day. We thought that would make them stop and listen to us, you know. But it didn't, so we had, you know, we didn't have another choice but to keep on with it. So what we had decided was that we would go in on Sunday at 4 o'clock, and everybody would set the counters up as usual. And when he opened the door and the students walked in, then everybody would walk out and, you know, just sit down. And the black students had, you know, some of the newspaper people there and Tar Heel paper, you know, and, you know, whatever. And they had notified a lot of the practically most of the students there on campus knew, you know, what was going to happen. And so that's what happened. So when he went to unlock the door, everybody just walked out and sat down. And he came back and he called Mary back to his office. And so when Mary, Mary looked at me, and so he came.
This was who, White?
Uh-huh. So he came up there and he said, Mary, I told you I want to see you back here. So I said, well, I'm sorry, you can't see Mary alone anymore. I said, you have to talk to all of us. And so, you know, no one person would go back there with him. So he didn't know how to handle that. So he ran back there, and he got on the phone, and he called Perlman. Well, Perlman came in, and he done the same thing. And he was going to make Mary, you know, talk to him privately. And so we told him that, you know, we was a group, and he'd have to talk to everybody. So he didn't say nothing to nobody else. He went and called Brant. So Branch came in, and and that's the first time, so when Branch came in, that's the first time that all of us had got to sit down at a table and talk with Branch, and, you know, because when we talked,
it never been a time when a group of you
right,
gone to see
talk
Branch,
to,
or
no,
a
not
group
a group
of you gone to see Prillamon?
No, just about three of us, because see, most of the workers were afraid. They were definitely afraid of Prillamon.
Mm-hmm.
They wouldn't, when I told them that I was going to see him about getting on permanent payroll, they were standing down there shaking. They said, "You're going to get fired. You don't go up them steps and mess with Mr. Prillamon." Oh, they were just, you know, beside themselves about it. They were definitely afraid of